Finding the right furniture for my home can be hard, especially when I'm looking for trendy, high-quality pieces that won't break the bank. Luckily, at Bob's Discount Furniture, I can shop the latest styles and customer favorites with tons of five-star reviews, like Bob's Real Marble Elm Dining Set, which has over 600 five-star reviews, the Copper Radiance Mattress, which over 400 Bob's customers say will give you five-star sleep, the ultra-comfy Phantom Reclining Sofa, which boasts over 1,000 five-star reviews, and the customizable modular Bob's Sectional, which not only costs just $250 per piece, but has over 1,700 five-star reviews. So when you're ready to score five-star style for every room in your home at everyday low prices, listen to the smartest shoppers around and stop in or shop online at Bob's Discount Furniture, where America shops for furniture.
At Lowe's, we're about to kick off something epic for fans who want more messy. And trust us, you'll want to be a rewards member when it happens. Join for free and get access to messy exclusives, surprises, and more. Head to Lowe's.com/moremessy. Now's the time to get in, because members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Yo, welcome to another episode of In a Minute with Evan Lovett, coming to you live from the heart of L.A. Although that's not really true, because I think we all know that the heart of L.A. is Dodger Stadium. And I am here with the voice of Dodger Stadium, or better yet, the voice of God in blue heaven on earth. I'm talking about Todd Lights, the PA announcer for the Dodgers. And Todd, can you just give us a little taste of what we have to look forward to today?
Well, Evan, first of all, I'm so happy to be here with you. I really enjoy what you do, and it's really great to be a part of this. But I prefer to be referred to as the voice of Todd in Blue Heaven on Earth. So let's just get that straight from the beginning. I don't have that much delusions of grandeur, so I'm not a god or anything. It's just Todd. Voice of Todd in Blue Heaven on Earth.
But if you hear that voice as you're listening, you know why people refer to that perhaps as the voice of God. But thank you for being here, honestly. I really appreciate you. And also, I got to give a shout out to our sponsor, Ardo Brick. You know them, manufacturing, fabricating tile and brick by hand from their factory in Gardena, employing dozens of people. They say manufacturing is tough in LA, and it is, but Ardo Brick, third generation business, American dream story, run by my man Armin, keeps doing it. And it's not just any brick and tile. This is truly high quality, historic stuff. They renovate and help restore landmarks like Olvera Street, Mariachi Plaza, La Plaza de Cultura y Artes. I work with Vallarta, Ojai Valley Inn. So this is really an LA institution. Support Ardo Brick for any of your commercial or residential needs. Always thank you to our great sponsor, Ardo Brick. As I said, we've done an episode, those of you that follow, we did an LA in a Minute together, and it's probably, if not the one, without a doubt, one of the most recognizable voices in Los Angeles. First of all, how does that feel? And do people just recognize that voice? How does that play out?
Well, almost everywhere I go, almost every day, somebody will say something to me. Some stranger will say, "Wow, that voice! You should be doing voiceovers, or are you on the radio?" Or, you know, they'll notice it just when I'm ordering a coffee or something like that. And so that's always kind of cool. But I'm noticing since I appeared with you, and since kind of my Instagram starting to blow up a little bit, I'm noticing people give me that side eye, and they're like, "I think I, right, I know that guy, you know, whatever. So that's kind of fun because, you know, as a voice actor and a guy that used to be on the radio, yeah. you can walk around anonymously and you know, be listened to by millions of people, but nobody recognizes you. And there's something that's kind of cool about that. But there's also something about people recognizing what you do and enjoying it and telling you about that. And I've been getting more and more of that. And it's fun, I have to admit.
I'm telling you this voice, and you guys hear it, see it, but I'm feeling it right now. Like, just his natural voice is like giving me those bass reverberations that you usually just get in the car when you're turning up the dope tracks. But and on that note real quick, I used to always say this. When I was growing up, the best kind of fame would be a Simpsons act, a Nancy Cartwright, a Dan Castellaneta, like those, Yeardley Smith, where everybody knows the voice and you're making all kinds of money and you're famous, but you could also like go out to eat and walk around town kind of somewhat anonymously. So you get the best of all worlds right there.
What did Bill Murray say one time? He said, don't try to get famous. Just try to get rich, because once you're famous, it's a 24-hour job. And everywhere you go, people want something from you or they want to do something. And you just can't just chill. You know, you have to be that guy 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So I kind of took heart with what Bill said.
Well, there's no escape in this voice. So you otherwise would just have to zip it all the time unless you want to get recognized. But that being said, we are here. This is World Series time right now.
Man.
Dodgers, back-to-back World Series, chasing what, 3 in 6 years that would be, or 3 in 5, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 3 in 6 years if they win it this year. And game one is today as far as when this episode drops.
Yep.
Give us your take on the World Series. I want to start there just because this is what this city's about right now.
I had a lot of confidence coming out of the championship series.
Uh-huh.
Getting past two of the best teams in the National League. Felt really good about
especially beating the Phillies. I thought the Phillies were going to be the toughest test. Yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of experts said that, you know, you get by the Phillies, you're going to win the World Series.
Yeah.
And that Milwaukee team was a tough, scrappy team. And
scrappy indeed, and had a lot of wins, best team in the National League. But finish what you were saying.
Well, we'll just kind of neutralized what made them a special team. And with, you know, what the experts also say, really good pitching beats really good hitting.
True.
And
old baseball
and
adage.
To have those four starters, Snell, Yamamoto, Glasnow, and Shohei is your fourth starter. To have those guys lined up, healthy, and pitching well, it's a luxury. Derek Jeter said it the other night. He was like, you know, that lineup and Shohei Ohtani is your fourth starter and all of them healthy and spitting fire.
Yeah.
Come on now. So, right. You know, so the Dodgers have to be favored. We have to be feeling good. Watching the Blue Jays win in dramatic fashion and watching George Springer
yes.
come up huge in the eighth inning and hit that eighth inning three-run blast to really put them over the top made me feel a little unsettled. I kind of was like, oh, because, you know, baseball is all about who's got that magic, who's got that little, where, you know, because the ball has to bounce the right way for
Absolutely.
You to get to the playoffs, to get, you know, deep into the playoffs. And I'm just like, I had this little sense of, oh, wow, okay. But I like that because that keeps the edge. You know, it's not, oh, yeah, we're going to just take this thing in four games.
Yeah.
We're not going to sweep. You know, you're not going to sweep a World Series. It happens. You know, but I feel pretty good about the way the Dodgers are playing, the way they're hitting, and the way, that, of course, that they're pitching. So, you know, the real big question mark going in was the bullpen. The bullpen seems to have righted their ship, and there's less exposure for them because the starters are going so deep into the games. That's very encouraging.
I'll tell you this. You hit a lot of the right notes. You hit a lot of the important notes, I should say. And I feel nearly identically, except for the fact that I would say I'm actually highly concerned. I'd be more concerned if it wasn't Dave Roberts, who I trust unequivocally as a leader. And I've been a Roberts backer, even when a lot of you were naysaying for years, by the way. and this is a team of professionals, but that layoff worries me. A 1 week layoff right before the World Series is concerning. And as you said, baseball is so, momentum is a word, but it is magic, juju, whatever you want to call it. There's a lot of that, those ephemeral,
intangible,
where it's just like, who has the magic is a great way to say it. And like you said, you brought him up, George Springer, who again, I will say this, I like George Springer. I think he's a good dude. I think he's a good hard-nosed player. Killed the Dodgers, World Series MVP against the Dodgers. You kind of knew he was going to have a big moment when he came up to the plate against the Mariners, and he did. That's a scary proposition with Vladdy in that lineup. This kid, Addison Barger, who, frankly, I didn't even know much about. Yeah. He's been hitting the heck out of the ball. Bichette might be coming back.
Dalton Varsho, who's had a big series, a former Dodger.
So, I didn't even put that together. Yeah. You're right. So, I'm concerned, but I will say this. The Dodgers not only have a pitching advantage, starting and now bullpen, as you mentioned, Trinan seems to have righted Sasaki Roki with Roki's walk-up song. I mean, his walk-out song now, too. Oh, yeah. That's a beautiful thing right there.
Did you see the guys pounding on the dugout rail when he was coming out playing the drums along with? That was really cool.
Love it. Love it.
And that stuff has to happen organically. You know, remember the Mets closer?
What's his name? Edwin Diaz.
Yeah.
With the horns?
Yeah, with the horns and everything. That was kind of a very cool thing that they did. And I think this with the drums and the it's really cool. So it just happened, you know, and thanks to Miggy Rowe for suggesting that song.
You know what's funny? I was looking at Miguel Rojas. My son was going through and this is very cool. We were going through my pictures. He wanted to see when his first game was. And he ends up going through my pictures in my phone. You know, you can search by Dodger Stadium now and all this kind of stuff. So I had 764 pictures of Dodger Stadium from throughout the years.
Nice.
And he went and hearted every single one of them, by the way, which I thought was pretty cool. But as we were going through those pictures, we did find his first game, which was in 2014. And Miguel Rojas was in the starting lineup, which was crazy because I know he left the Dodgers and Marlins and all this, but I'm like, that's OG status now. That's not like he was just a Dodger. He was a Dodger from way back.
Well, he went away. And he was the guy that made a big play at third base to preserve Kershaw's no-hitter late in the game. And if Hanley Ramirez hadn't thrown a ball away from short,
it might have been
a perfect game.
I think it would have been a perfecto. And I love Hanley, by the way, but that's a tough one.
Well, he had a monster season that year. Down. And then Joe Kelly.
Wasn't it Joe Kelly?
Joe Kelly hit him in the ribs when he was pitching for the Cardinals.
All comes around, man. So, World Series, look, this is going to be, as you said, I almost thought it was a coronation. We beat the Phillies. The experts were like, this is the World Series. Like, da, da, da.
Right.
But the Blue Jays are tough. And look, I think it's going 7 games, which also game 7 is November 1st, which happens to be my son's birthday.
Oh, wow.
Which is a conflict because, you know, happy birthday, we're going to celebrate. But hold on, we got to watch every single second of this Dodger game. So, but it's going to be one hell of a series. And I'm excited. And you are going to be there for every minute at Dodger Stadium.
Yep.
I want to know, and we're going to get into your origin story and all that stuff, but this is now your third World Series with the Dodgers, but did you, 2020, did they even have, I don't even recall, were the games at the stadium?
Technically, it's my fifth. 2017.
Oh, Jesus.
2018.
Of course.
2020.
Right. Yeah.
24, yeah. And now 25.
Astros now, and Red Sox. I conveniently forgot those two. Right? Yeah. But, yeah, right.
Well, it was ancient history, right. back 6-7 years ago. But, 2020, we didn't get any games at Dodger Stadium for the World Series. They were at,
Texas.
Globe Life Park out in Texas.
Yeah.
Right? And so that was a bummer because we didn't get to participate in it. It was crazy. We had some of the playoff games. We actually had the series between the A's and the Astros that year.
At Dodger Stadium?
Yeah, at Dodger Stadium because it was part of the bubble.
No recollection.
It was part of the West Coast bubble. And so I had to call, both teams kind of right down the middle. And we had to watch the Astros.
Were there fans? Were there fans?
There were some fans.
But they were doing that thing where it was like pockets of fans,
yeah,
stuff like that.
Yeah, okay. It was a very small, yeah, you know, crowd. And so I had to like, on a home team day or a home game day for the Astros, I had to treat them like the home team. And then on a home game day for the A's, I treated them like the home team. And it stuck in my craw big time.
Of course.
Because, you know, 2017 was still a wound at that point. Ooh. And just have to say, you know, Jose Altuve, you know, just kind of, it was rough because a lot of the guys were the same from the 2017 team.
Yeah.
And then they won and we had to watch them celebrate yet again on the field, boy, at Dodger Stadium, a division series championship.
Well, so, glad to see the Astros not make the playoffs this year,
yeah,
because that's redeeming for a lot of reasons. But let's talk about the World Series. So how much different is the World Series for you? So this is, you said, going to be your fifth World Series. How much different is it than a normal game for you?
Well, the playoffs are different just, yeah, in their, you know, the MLB kind of takes over a lot of what we are able and authorized to do in pregame and in during the game. They have certain MLB things that, like, you know, Stand Up to Cancer or, you know, one of their, Nutrafol is their sponsor. They
I've
do a
seen them all
thing.
Over the place, yeah, the Nutrafol, right.
Yeah, yeah, and then, you know.
In the bullpens, in the back of the bullpens, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's crazy. Okay, good branding.
So that's all branding and marketing and stuff like that. So that's different. There's different credentialing. There's a lot more people in the press box. There's a lot more attention. There's, you know, and that starts in the wild card series.
Yeah, okay.
But each round ramps it up just another. But we've been dealing with that because we've got Shohei Ohtani, and Shohei Ohtani brings with him a whole retinue of Japanese media and other media from the Far East that travel with him and follow him around. In fact, I'm doing an interview on a Japanese television program on Sunday. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that because, you know, I'm starting to become known in Japan.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of fun.
That's sweet.
So yeah, my wife and I have to make a trip out to Japan and kind of capitalize on some of that fun.
That's supposedly the hot place to be going, by the way. We wanted my son keeps coming up this episode, but his bucket list was like Tokyo, and my wife's a little bit indie. And we wanted to go to Japan, but she's like, oh, everybody's going to Japan now. Like, wait till it cools down.
She likes to do the opposite.
Yeah, but it's going to be cool. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, so we're planning a trip there. And so, you know, the playoffs and especially the World Series, it just creates a whole nother focus and a whole nother energy. And it just, it's really fun. You know, the media requests for interviews with me and go up. And it's just, you know, and it seems like the whole city gets together and rallies around the Dodgers, and more than just about any other team, maybe besides the Lakers, I suppose.
Look, I've debated this back and forth internally with myself, but also with people. I think, look, the Dodgers are LA's team, and there were Laker parades throughout this century. Thank you, Shaq. Thank you, Kobe, mm-hmm, Phil Jackson, everybody, Jeannie Buss. Thank you, everybody involved in making that happen. But I think the highlight, my Los Angeles City highlight, was that parade last year on November 1st. We started at City Hall. We took the Metro, started at City Hall, 300,000 people, which sounds like actually an undercount if you were there. I mean, but I have never seen Los Angeles unite the way that they united for the parade. And there's something about the Dodgers, the location, the demographics, the beauty of it. And again, every time you're there, we were there last week. I went to game 3 for the Brewers, where you obviously the mountains, beautiful mountains, and it's nestled in the ravine and beautiful state. But it was also right after a rain. So you had the snow. You had one side, you had the snow-capped mountains.
It's amazing, right?
And it's like, so, and people real, and the bluest blue sky and the palm trees everywhere. You're like, this is so Los Angeles. And I think that people unite around the Dodgers in this city more than they unite around anything that has to do with Los Angeles. So that's a beautiful thing. So it's another reason the Dodgers need to win the World Series this year. And you're a legit fan. Like, you, even before you were with this organization, you were a Dodger fan. Is that right?
I was. I mean, I've lived here since 1985. Most people who know me well know that I grew up in Boston.
Yep.
And I grew up a Boston Red Sox fan, which was a
boo,
which was a long suffering. Yeah. You know, I grew up and fell in love with baseball in the early 70s, late 60s, early 70s. Okay. And the Red Sox kept on getting beaten by the Yankees, and they just couldn't overcome them. The Yankees were their nemesis. The Yankees were their daddy. And they just couldn't get over that hump until 2004. And I have some cool stories about my, you know, experience during that 2004 season with the Red Sox. I sang the national anthem at Fenway Park that year.
Wow.
I went to their fantasy camp with my brother.
Yeah. Were you a baseball player growing up?
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, I still play out in the Showbiz League out in Encino.
Hardball?
Fast pitch softball.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Modified fast pitch softball.
Fast pitch is tricky though, man. I played adult league baseball, played slow pitch. Fast pitch is tough. It's interesting. Okay, go on.
I've been playing on the same team in the same league for 35 seasons consecutively.
That's awesome.
And I only got out there one day this year because I have a shoulder injury. I think it's a rotator cuff.
Yeah.
I haven't gotten it diagnosed yet. But I've been on the sidelines. But I did get out there and I played one game, so I kept my streak alive. But that, you know, first of all, a team being together for 35 years.
It's incredible.
A league being, you know, viable for 35 years, and a person being able to show up and play from the age of 22 to 62, which is what I'm at now, is pretty amazing. It's something I'm proud of.
I played.
So yeah, I'm a player.
I played baseball after high school and college and all that stuff. I joined the Pacific Coast Baseball at PCBL, and I played for 11 years, which I thought was pretty impressive.
Yeah, it is impressive.
As an adult. But that's
didn't you guys travel around? Like it's not just one field.
It's
like
everywhere. We went from Masters College up in Santa Clarita to El Camino Junior College. Sometimes at Grant High School, but it's all over. Which I love because I love seeing all the different fields
different
and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But
did you ever play at the field at Griffith Park? That field where
the famous one where that book for the pirate. There was a book written about like an adult league Pirates team. I forget what it's called, but that was a great. No, I never played there.
Yeah, that's a cool.
And then we got to, but we played all at Glendale West.
Finding the right furniture for my home can be hard, especially when I'm looking for trendy, high quality pieces that won't break the bank. Luckily, at Bob's Discount Furniture, I can shop the latest styles and customer favorites with tons of 5-star reviews, like Bob's Real Marble Elm Dining Set, which has over 600 5-star reviews, the Copper Radiance Mattress, which over 400 Bob's customers say will give you 5-star sleep, the Ultra Comfy Phantom Reclining Sofa, which boasts over 1,000 5-star reviews, and the customizable modular Bob's Sectional, which not only costs just $250 per piece, but has over 1,700 5-star reviews. So when you're ready to score 5-star style for every room in your home at everyday low prices, listen to the smartest shoppers around and stop in or shop online at Bob's Discount Furniture, where America shops for furniture.
At Lowe's, we're about to kick off something epic for fans who want more messy. And trust us, you'll want to be a rewards member when it happens. Join for free and get access to messy exclusives, surprises, and more. Head to Lowe's.com/moremessy. Now's the time to get in, because members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
All this stuff. So you're a baseball player, baseball guy, grew up a Red Sox fan.
Yeah,
huh?
But you know, I came out here in 84, and the first Dodger game I went to was with my father-in-law, who was an agent for William Morris. And so he was Catherine Hepburn's agent. He was Carl Reiner's agent. He was Gore Vidal's agent. He was Carl Malden's agent.
Wow, this is some great names.
He made the deal for Carl Malden on the American Express Traveler's Checks commercials, which, you know, a big film actor didn't do commercials back then, but he got him that deal, made him a very rich man. Anyway, Carl Reiner had seats right behind home plate, and he gave them to my father-in-law, Mike. And Mike said, Todd, let's go to a Dodger game. So I sat behind home plate with him, like in the third row or some great seats.
Yeah.
And that's when I kind of fell in love with Dodger Stadium. I said, you know what? The Red Sox, I still love the Red Sox, and I want them to win the World Series at some point, break the curse and all that.
Yeah.
But this is special. This is cool. This stadium, this team.
Yeah.
And, you know, when growing up with my brother playing wiffle ball, he was always the Dodgers, Garvey, Say.
Hey.
You know, all those guys, right. Dusty Baker.
Bill Russell,
and
yeah.
And I was the 75 Red Sox, and you know, so I was, you know. And so, you know, those two teams have always been, and they're great. I mean, they got two of the oldest ballparks in the majors. They got two of the most venerable franchises. But now, as far as the Red Sox are concerned, they can just
shove it.
They can just stay over there in Boston for all I care. But, you know, I still have a lot of family in New England and, you know, a lot of Red Sox fans. And I will tell you this, because this was something that was cool that happened this year. There's a National Baseball Poetry Association, and they do an actual event every year. And they had a contest, to write a poem about the Green Monster. Okay. So I said, I got a story about the Green Monster. So I wrote a poem, and it had to be tight, iambic pentameter verse, and it had to be able to be delivered in under a minute, because the winner of the thing was going to go on NESN, New England Sports Network, and recite the poem. Okay. They wanted it to be brief. It couldn't be like the Iliad or something, probably, right?
Yeah. Right, right, right.
So I wrote a poem about my experience at Fenway Park, getting an at-bat at Fenway Park and hitting a ball off the Green Monster. I saw one pitch, hit it off the monster, so I wrote this poem, and it won the contest. And so I was on the air at NESN. I got to recite the poem.
Come on.
With Ilana Rizzo. Remember Ilana Rizzo?
Of course. I love Ilana. Absolute professional. Great work. Still follow her on X. Wish she was still out here. I mean, Dodgers do a great job of hiring the whole media team and everything.
But she was awesome. Now she's up at network level. But she was hired by NESN not too long ago. And she found out that it was me that wrote the poem. It's just, I want to interview mine. I know Todd. So we had this nice interview, and I got to recite my poem. And so now you have to call me an award-winning poet laureate, as well as an announcer. So that was really fun.
That's super sweet. Wait, tell me, I don't want to get too hung up on this, but this is my language. Why did you get in a bat at Fenway Park?
Because I said I went to fantasy camp that
year.
Oh, okay. And as part of the thing, they said, we're going to have a fantasy camp day at Fenway Park in June, and you guys are all invited to come to the game. And the two top teams at the camp, mine was one of them, will be introduced by the PA announcer on the lines before the game in uniform.
Were you critiquing this PA announcer?
I was not a PA announcer at that point.
Oh, okay.
I first did some PA announcing with the great Joe Castiglione, who's the radio voice of the Red Sox for decades.
Hardcore Boston guy.
And he was doing PA, and I said, hey, Joe, can I announce a few batters? And so I did, and he's like, kid, you got some pipes on you, you know? And and I thought, okay, well, that's interesting. And
no,
so anyway, that as part of that weekend, we got introduced in uniform.
Wow.
I said to them, hey, it's fantasy camp day. Can I sing the anthem that day?
Yeah.
And so they were like, great idea. Send us a tape. And so I did. And they said, all right, you're booked. So after my team and my brother and I are on the line, tipping our caps to the fans and stuff. And then I go back and sing the national anthem at Fenway Park in a Boston Red Sox uniform. Which was like crazy. And then the next day, each team got a chance to play I think it was a 3 or 4 inning game on the field at Fenway. And our team was, since we were the two top teams, the team that beat us in the championship, we played them. And they had a really good pitcher who had just come out of the minor leagues. He was like 30 years old.
Oh, so legit.
And I was in my 40s at this time. My brother is about a year younger than me.
Yeah.
So, so I got one at bat in this game, and I knew that I wanted to swing at the first pitch. I said, I'm going to jump on this guy's fastball because he had a wicked slider that just darted away from you, and he neutralized this in the championship game. I'm not going to let that happen. So I just got up there, this wood bats, the whole thing, swung at the first pitch that I saw, and I'm like, that's going to go over the monster. And then all of a sudden I hear clang, and it hit off the wall for a run-scoring double, and we won the game. So that was a great memory. So I wrote a poem about that experience.
Wow, man. In less than a minute, though. Like, that had to be pretty tight poem to cover all that.
Yeah, yeah. I dig into the batter's box and see it looming in left field. The fabled monster of the Fens, that hungry homer shield. I tap the bat on hallowed ground. I can't believe I'm here. A chance to hit at Fenway Park and hear the faithful cheer. I won my turn at fantasy camp with other Red Sox fans to play a game on the same field where the great green monster stands. Well, here's the pitch, and I don't miss. A drive hit wicked far. And I have the briefest passing thought. It's going to leave the yard. But then I hear that storied clank as it caroms off the wall. A double off the green monster, symbol of Beantown ball. And that's the poem.
Ooh, that is dope. And committed to memory. And committed to memory. That's almost more. No, that was actually beautiful. Great job. I won a poetry contest once myself.
Did you?
But it was just for reciting. This is a true story, though. Sixth grade, Pinecrest Elementary School.
That's where my daughters went.
Really?
Pinecrest.
All right. No longer in existence.
Yeah, I guess it doesn't. Yeah.
But I read Casey at the Bat.
Oh.
In sixth grade. And for whatever reason, that won the poetry contest. I got to go to
the district.
Oh, man. I was a baseball guy. 95% of my waking hours, energy, resources, money went into baseball related activities until I discovered girls and partying and fun and school and all that. I'm not even school. School is still secondary. But anyway, yours is much more impressive. All right. I want to know, where'd the Boston accent go? If born and raised over there, what happened to that?
I don't know if I ever really had it. Although I've heard recordings of my younger brother. He used to, you know, make movies and record things back in the old days. And he definitely had it. We were in Massachusetts, and we had this Massachusetts accent. It was like, really, you know,
Ma, can I have another? I got an idea, Ma. You know, it's wicked hot, but you know, all that stuff. So I kind of get it when I go back there, but it's
still in there. It's still in there.
But it wasn't like a conscious suppression?
No, I didn't have to like go to diction school or anything like that to try to lose it. I just kind of, you know, I've been out in California since 1977, I think. So it's been a long time. I've been here, and now I'm kind of Californian. Yeah.
Shout out Fred Armisen, by the way.
Yeah.
Where is your, tell us that story about when you first realized that you had the voice.
Well, I was 13, and I guess my voice had changed over the summer break or something. And I had just moved to the Bay Area from Boston area.
Bay Area, where?
Yeah, I went to high school at Redwood High School up in Marin County.
Okay. Why did you guys go over there, by the way?
My dad got a job with BBDO, a big ad agency in San Francisco.
Holy cow. Okay.
And so he moved us out to California. We're like, yeah, California, here I come. But I thought it was all going to be like Southern Cal and the Sunkist commercials that I used to see on
totally
TV.
Totally different. Northern California is great, but totally different. Yeah.
And so, but we really liked it up there. And I went to high school there. But anyway, I was a new kid in school. And the teacher says, taking attendance, you know, Todd Lights here. And the girl started to giggle. And I thought, why are they laughing? You know, are they laughing because I'm the new kid in school? But it was because my voice was different than the other boys. And their voices, I guess, hadn't changed yet. So they're all here, you know. And mine was down here already by
wow.
then.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it's changed a little bit since then, but, it was there. And I'll never forget when I was in high school, I had a drama teacher. I just took a Shakespeare on stage class. We used to recite Shakespeare.
Yeah.
And I had no, you know, I was a jock, you know, I was on the football team. I was on track and baseball and all that shit.
Track too, huh?
Yeah.
You're
yeah,
fast?
I was really fast.
Wow.
Now I'm just all right. A fat, slow old guy, but
you can still swing it though, but go on. Right.
Yeah. But so I had no, and he said, he goes, you know, you've got a really special voice, and I think that you would really do good on stage.
This was in high school.
This was in high school. By the time I was like a junior.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed reading aloud. I enjoyed, you know, now is the winter of our discontent, made glorious summer by this son of York. I enjoyed doing all that. I loved the language of it and stuff. So I was like, okay, I'll try it.
Yeah.
Pretty soon I was doing musicals and stuff like that and singing on stage, writing music for stage productions and stuff like that. And that kind of like took my career from, oh, I'm going to be a, you know, a running back for USC to, you know, I'm going to be an actor.
Yeah.
And so I started doing theater and plays, and then I started, you know, when I was in college, I started doing some television work and things like that. And you know, that's it's I've had a very circuitous career, that's for sure. I've done several different things.
Circuitous and fortuitous for those of us who get to listen to this voice every day in Los Angeles. You went to college in San Diego, though, correct?
Yeah, UC San Diego.
So did our producer, John Na, by the way.
Go Tritons, baby.
What brought you down there?
I just wanted I wanted to get to the warm, beachy kind of fun. And the fact that it was in La Jolla, you know, if you know UCSD, it's a highly math, science, medicine, intense, you know, intellectual school.
Right.
It's not a party school like people think of it, because that's San Diego State was more the party school. And UCSD was the kind of school where the medical students would go on top of a building and then they would cut their things and they'd set themselves on fire and jump off because it was so intense, you know. These people really knew how to commit suicide. And
damn. Okay.
Yeah, so it was that serious. It wasn't all fun and games. And I was a liberal arts guy. I was like, you know, studying literature and drama and voice and communications. And I ended up with a degree in political science, and then communications and voice were my minors. So it kind of, but then I became a journalist a few years later. How so that political science kind of fit really nicely.
What did you think of San Diego?
I liked it a lot. I loved it. I mean, I lived in Del Mar. I mean, I lived in La Jolla. I lived in Solana Beach.
Yeah.
I mean, it's heaven down there. It really is.
I always say, and it's a big thing, is if I did not live in Los Angeles, I would live in San Diego. It is friggin' fantastic.
I get a certain feeling when I go back there. You know, I used to ride my bike everywhere, and I still have my old Mustang that I used to drive around, you know, down the beach between La Jolla and Del Mar. You know, that hill you go, Camino Del Mar, between Torrey Pines.
Yeah.
And I just get this feeling when I go there. So it has a very strong place in my heart. And as you know, I think I actually tried out for the San Diego Padres.
I was going to cue that up. You were not just tried out. You were like almost the PA. You were almost the guy.
Told me it was like a razor thin between me and the guy, Alex Miniak, who got the job, who still has it today.
What happened? Tell us the story about how we would have never had Todd Lights in Chavez Ravine at Dodger Stadium.
I lived up here. My daughters were here. My wife was here. Our life was here. And I just said, well, let's try it. And we'll, if I get the job, we'll figure it out, you know? But I'm so glad I did not get the job.
So are we.
However, I have to thank the San Diego Padres because they gave me the chance to learn how to be a PA announcer. I'd never done anything like that before, really.
Yeah.
I mean, I was a radio guy, so I knew that when somebody said, okay, you're live, that I didn't go, what? You know, I was ready, you know.
Right.
I was a professional voice at that point already. But being a PA announcer is a different animal. It's a different type of speaking and announcing and so forth. But you have to, you know, you get things to read and you have to read them clearly and concisely and you have to speak whatever. So they helped me get ready and get really good at being a PA announcer.
So you were down the path. And I know there was a tryout and all this kind of stuff. So
it wasn't just one tryout. It was like 3 months.
Were you doing it? Were you doing work at the stadium? Did you ever do Petco?
Yes.
Was it Petco at the time?
We did opening day, and then like by that point, I think there was a top five, and so we would do a couple innings each.
No kidding.
And this was during the regular season.
And were they basing on like audience reaction? Like
there was a social media component where people would vote.
Wow.
Who they liked.
Okay.
And I got a lot of. I think I surprised them. I think that they had Alex was their guy.
Yeah.
And they just said, let's get some heat around this thing. And they did this contest. It was like an open call, you know? It felt like American Idol. You were lined up around the stadium with a bunch of other people that just said, I'm going to come down here and try this thing, which is what I did. And so I remember I was number 53 into the stadium and read a couple things, you know, from the seats. And they're like, okay, we'll get back to you. And then it was, you know, top 100, top 50, top 25, top 10, top 5. Okay. And this went from, I think, late February all the way past opening day. Hmm. And then it was just three of us at the end. And that's when I found out that I didn't get the job. And I was crestfallen. I was, course, you know, I was, man, at that point, I'm like, I got this, man. This job is mine.
Yeah.
And I didn't. And looking back on it, I'm like, best thing that ever happened to me.
There you go. Now, at the time, or I don't know if it was at the time, because you did some work with MySafe LA and the Los Angeles Fire Department, but you were also a reporter, as you mentioned, for KNX. Shout out KNX, Odyssey. Thank you for distributing the podcast.
Yeah, right.
But KNX, and you did work for KABC as well, right?
I did some work for KABC, only on a like a fill-in.
But KNX was your big, like,
KNX
journalist?
KNX, I worked from 99 to 09.
What were you doing for KNX?
I was a street reporter. I was an anchor.
So you were actually going out and getting stories and doing the whole...
Yeah, I started as a writer, and then news director said, kid, you got some good pipes. Have you ever thought about being a reporter?
Like, you're wasting this guy's talent if he's just writing.
Like, but it was good because I got a nice base of how to write for radio.
Good point.
Which is a different type of writing than it is for newspaper. It's a different flow. It's a different, you know, instead of saying Evan Lovett, creator of LA in a Minute, you say the creator of LA in a Minute, Evan Lovett. You know, it's a total different way. That I had that basis to go into my reporting work. And then from there, they made me an anchor. And so I anchored the weekend news, which was fun.
Yeah.
And then 08, 09, the bottom fell out of everything, and they've just laid off a whole bunch of people, just like they did at KFI recently.
They
just gutted their news department.
Yeah.
So,
it's a tough biz.
So I never could get a full-time job again. So I was like, I better pivot. So I became an EMT. I always liked interviewing firefighters and covering fires. I covered a lot of fires and a lot of disasters.
LA.
And the firefighters, I felt I had something simpatico with the firefighters. And so I was like, and I had a friend that played drums in my band who was a firefighter. And he goes, well, you could be one if you wanted to, you know, there's no age limit.
Yeah.
So I started that path. And first and foremost, you got to become an EMT. Because all firefighters are EMTs. Okay. So I did that and worked on an ambulance crew for a little while. And I actually did standbys, EMT standbys at Dodger Stadium. Which was good, good because you're going to have just very minor injuries and you know, you're not going to have decapitations and horrible car accidents.
There was an era, though, at Dodger Stadium where it got a little dicey for some...
This was like from 09 to 2010.
Okay, so when they started.
Things were a little bit... Okay. You know, mostly it was drunk people or people that got you know, hit by a foul ball or something like that.
Right.
But there was, you know, we had a couple serious ones where a little kid got hit in the head and we were really concerned that he had a bleed and stuff like that. So... Yeah, so I kind of got involved with the emergency response, first responder world. From there, and
that's
then believe
awesome.
It or not, you know Tom LaBonge, right?
Yep,
former city council.
Yeah, we have a call with his family, with his two brothers on Monday.
Which ones?
Bobby and let me see here. Hold on, we just booked it.
I know one of them. Works
Mark.
Mark, I think, works in the TV industry.
Mark and Bobby.
Yeah. So I worked for Tom. I was Tom's press deputy.
Tom LaBonge, Mr. LA,
Mr. LA.
Like that guy. And I'll be honest with you,
you might be the new Mr. LA.
I appreciate that. And it's funny because I remember the name. My dad was like peripherally involved in politics. He was a big union guy and a big state employee. So he followed all this stuff. And I didn't care about that stuff. I mean, I didn't care about that stuff growing
younger,
up. But you pick it up. You know, peripherally, but I had always heard the name, didn't really put it together. But when I started LA in a Minute, people were like, "You got to talk about Tom LaBonge. He loved LA like nobody else." Like,
he
blah, blah,
taught
blah.
Me how to love LA.
Wow!
So I worked for him for just 2 years, and as his press deputy.
Okay. Yeah.
But if you know Tom, you know he didn't need a press deputy because he would see cameras and he would go to them like a moth to flame. You know, and you almost had to say, "Tom, just don't." Say that.
Hold on. So you were in politics as well?
Yeah, I worked at City Hall. I had to wear a suit every day. And he kind of recruited me. I remember that when I first interviewed with him, I was wearing my EMT uniform.
Yeah.
And he goes, well, maybe you'd like to serve the city in a different way. What? And I'm like, okay. And so it was great because I had a lot of friends in the media from being a reporter.
Yeah.
So I could talk to them and I said, well, you know, what's your deadline?
Yeah, you know that language.
I knew how to, and they liked that. You know, they liked that Tom had somebody that understood their needs.
Yeah.
And I always appreciated that as a reporter because it's like, no, don't make us wait. You know we have to be on the air at the top of the just give us a little crumb. That's all we need to go with.
Totally.
Anyway, so that was a really fun job because the 4th district, city council district at that time, included the Miracle Mile. It included parts of Sherman Oaks. It included the Hollywood sign. It included parts of the Walk of Fame.
It's a cool area.
It had some of all the best of LA that you know so well. The tar pits, the Museum Row, all that stuff was part of our constituency. So that was a really, really fun job. And, I learned a lot about the city, and like I said, Tom's enthusiasm made me love LA in a way that I had never loved it before because I'm not a native.
Right.
And so he taught me all the beautiful parts of LA because I saw a lot of the bad stuff as a reporter. I saw a lot of the...
First responder too. You know, you're not...
And first responder.
With pleasant stuff. Yeah.
So... That, you know, and all that stuff kind of came together, and through that I met, you know, more of the higher ups at the fire department and the people at MySafe LA. And when I left Tom's office, I went to MySafe LA and started working doing fire safety education. So I was up in front of elementary school kids with the fire department there with us, telling them about how to escape their home in case there's a fire, what to do in an earthquake, what to do with your smoke alarms, all that stuff. So that was a really cool thing. And I think all of that stuff, all of my journalism and political stuff and first responder stuff has all informed my work as a PA announcer because it's baseball, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the pregame ceremonies always have to do with, you know, this dignitary or this honorary.
A lot of pomp and circumstance going into that. And I pay more attention to your work now, I'll be honest. I'm usually walking around doing stuff, grabbing a beer, eating, talking to people.
Most people are.
And but now more attuned. I honestly never even put together that your work starts before the game. I think you know, like first pitch or maybe national anthem. But no, you're live. You're like not on air, but you're doing stuff from what? Let's say it's the 7:05 start. You're on it
6 o'clock on.
Yeah, you know? It's so pretty continuous.
Sometimes it's like, can't we just play baseball? I mean, the pregame show is so, you know, there's so much in it. And then a lot of times at the end of the season, they cram all kinds of different sponsorship type elements into it. So by the time the game comes, it's like, oh, okay, now we can just play baseball. Leading off the game, blah, 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 you know, and here we go. And it's all baseball. And at that point, I'm just, you know, reacting to what's going on the field, you know, who's in, who's out, who's pitching, who got intentionally walked, that kind of stuff is what I'm paying attention
what
to.
What happens if you flub a word or flub a name or something?
Oh, I've done it, bro. I've done it. They're few and far between.
Right.
I'm pretty good at what I do.
Yeah, you're a professional. You're
but it happens. And I think just the other night I called Andy Páez Andrew. There was a guy coming into from the other team, Milwaukee, Andrew Monasterio came in just at that moment. And then Páez was about to hit, and my producer's like, okay, get him in quick because they wanted to get a crowd prompt or something in there, like, get loud kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so I just kind of like said, Andrew Páez. And I was like, oh, God.
Do you get a do-over? What happens? That's live, real-time stuff.
Let it go. You just keep going. Keep going. Unless it's something horrendous. You say, I haven't really had to come back and say, oh, so-and-so rather, or something like that. I just go on. The worst one I ever did, and I'm coming clean here because, you know, nobody's perfect. But it was, I think, not too long after Joe Davis took over as play-by-play
Joe
guy.
Joe Davis is so damn good.
And Joe Kelly had just joined the Dodgers, and he was having all these really weird appearances. Like he'd show up and he'd hit a batter, and then somebody would get a little dinker, and then and then somebody hit a home run or something off him. And he'd have all these weird things that would happen. So anyway, he's coming in, and I'm supposed to say, you know, fans, your attention, please. Now pitching for the Dodgers, number 17 or 99 at the time.
Yeah,
or 17 at the time, actually. Joe Kelly, I'm supposed to say. But I was hearing Joe Davis in my ear. Welcome to the booth. This is Joe Davis along with Oral Hershiser. And you know, this top of the sixth inning, Joe Kelly. And I got Joe Davis on my mind. So I said, coming in to pitch for the Dodgers, number 17, Joe Davis. And Justin Turner, like, immediately goes over to Joe Kelly as he's coming in and, like, puts his arm around him. And they have a little chuckle. It's like, I guess you're Joe Davis now or something like that. I forget what I never had a chance to ask him what he said. But that was a major gaffe, and people on Dodger Talk on AM570 afterwards were saying, did you hear the PA announcer
call him
Joe Davis? Oh, my God, what an idiot. And to his credit, and I've always been thankful for this, David Vasse, who's the host of Dodger Talk, said,
what's up,
hey, Vasse? Wait a minute, bro. Wait just a minute. I've been around the league. I've heard every PA announcer there is, and you don't know how lucky we are to have. And I was like, and he's got a great beard too, because back then I had a
really big beard. Silhouette, your logo or your avatar, or whatever.
It was out of control.
But at one point you were a fresh shaven, like clean, and I see those pictures. Like for instance, when you sung the national anthem at Dodger Stadium before you were with the organization, clean cut Todd Lights.
Yep, in a suit and tie. Yeah.
Well, so two things. One,
that was a younger me.
How did you get to sing the national anthem at Dodger Stadium at that point? I saw 2011, but I also read that you've done it multiple times. I watched the 2011 one, which, by the way, magnificent, Pavarotti-esque, dare I say.
Yeah, and I got to sing God Bless America in the seventh inning at that time. On I think it was on Sundays. We would do God Bless America as well.
How'd you pull that? Because you weren't part of the organization at the time.
I wasn't. I just sent them a thing, and I would sing it twice a year, and sometimes on big games like Mother's Day, Father's Day, Friday Night Fireworks nights. So usually it was two times a season they would book me, and then I got the job there, and I haven't sung it since. Although I did sing it in 2020, we had a. With no fans in the stands, just cutouts, right? And it was they invited some of their taxi squad players to come in and play a real game. Guys like Gavin Lux, who was still in the minors at the time. Guys like that came in and got to play a game. So I sang the anthem from the press box with Dieter, and it was tough because of the delay at the time. But so I have sung it. You know, allow myself to introduce me. Singing the national anthem is yours truly. And I forget how I introduced myself, but it was something like
that. Could you do it again? Would you do it again? Would they?
They tell me that if somebody doesn't show up, that I would be the fill-in. For a long time, it was a guy named Howie Levine, a longtime usher and concession guy. He would sing if somebody didn't show up on time or whatever.
Wow.
But they tell me that it would be me. So there have been times when they've said...
Would you go down to the field or would you sing it from the booth?
Probably from the booth, I think. Because, you know, there's so much other stuff going on after the anthem.
And then you go
to lineups.
Hustle.
And then we go to time for Dodger baseball and ceremonial
first
pitch.
That's crazy. So you're always kind of on call, if you will, for that.
Yeah, and I suppose I could do that some of that stuff from the field. So we'll see. We'll see.
Finding the right furniture for my home can be hard, especially when I'm looking for trendy, high-quality pieces that won't break the bank. Luckily, at Bob's Discount Furniture, I can shop the latest styles and customer favorites with tons of five-star reviews, like Bob's Real Marble Elm Dining Set, which has over 600 five-star reviews, the Copper Radiance Mattress, which over 400 Bob's customers say will give you five-star sleep, the ultra-comfy Phantom Reclining Sofa, which boasts over 1,000 five-star reviews, and the customizable modular Bob's Sectional, which not only costs just $250 per piece, but has over 1,700 five-star reviews. So when you're ready to score five-star style for every room in your home at everyday low prices, listen to the smartest shoppers around and stop in or shop online at Bob's Discount Furniture, where America shops for furniture.
At Lowe's, we're about to kick off something epic for fans who want more messy. And trust us, you'll want to be a rewards member when it happens. Join for free and get access to messy exclusives, surprises, and more. Head to Lowe's.com/moremessy. Now's the time to get in, because members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
I'm Dana Carvey.
I'm David Spade.
Fly on the Wall's back for another season now on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
So many incredible guests will be joining us.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Too good to be true.
If it ever happens.
Hold on. You mentioned the echo. And I always wonder about that because there is a little bit of delay. And now you're probably used to it. Of course, you have to be used to it. But there is that delay, the feedback, the background noise when you're up in the booth. You just block that out. How does that?
There's a lot of distraction. The delay is about a second. So you open your mouth and speak, and about a second later, it comes back to you because the cluster is out in deep center field. And that's about 1,100 feet away. So it takes about a second for it to get back. Then I've got people talking in my ear. You know, in my headphones, I can hear the broadcast. I can hear my producer.
Whoa.
I can hear our stage managers down in the field saying, okay, we're ready with a military hero, you know, and stuff like that. And I'm, you know, a lot of times they'll pipe in right when I'm now bad, at, you know, right when I'm about to announce. So there's a lot of things to block out. And there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of potential distractions and potential minds that
and there
be stepped on.
There have to have been technical glitches during games. I mean, is there
we've lost power. I remember one time the power went out. There was some kind of problem that it went out a couple times. And so at the end of the game, I signed off. I'm your public address announcer, Todd. Lights out, lights. Wishing you a good night, everybody. You know?
Yes.
And so just having a little fun with that kind of thing. But we've had all kinds of little glitches and, you know, sometimes stuff doesn't work, but very rarely does the whole sound system go down. It's very rare.
I got to say this. From the outside, the Dodgers are an extremely well-oiled machine. I always say the Dodgers and In-N-Out are probably the two, like, bulletproof institutions in Los Angeles that even when criticism is leveled at them or, you know, political landmines and things like that, the Dodgers and In-N-Out are the two. They're like, we're just going to keep doing what we do and you're going to be happy about it because we're so good at all those things. Talk to me about pronunciation and names because there are so many different from so many countries represented. Pronunciation is important to a lot of players. Do you practice that? Who do you talk to? How do you prep when it's a new team with some rookies, some new players that you have names you haven't seen? Where does that come from?
I have to do some homework on it. And I'm lucky that I speak a little Spanish because there's a lot of Latino
names.
Don't
you do? Jeez.
I hear you're pretty fluent.
I'd say almost. Yeah. I'm close.
Yeah. So, you know, I have the Spanish pronunciation down pretty good. And sometimes I overdo it. You know, sometimes, you know, Adrian Gonzalez, his real name is Adrian Gonzalez.
Okay.
Right? But it would sound kind of silly if I said it that way. So I fudge it a little bit. I would say Adrian Gonzalez, could give it a little, anglify it a little bit, but also that's why I say Teoscar Hernandez. Teoscar Hernandez. Yeah. I do that. And I asked him about it. I said, do you want me, you know, your name is Teoscar. It's not Teoscar. Right? But everybody calls him Teoscar.
Right.
But when he introduces himself, he says, hi, I'm Teo. It's Teo. Teoscar.
Yeah.
So that's the way I say it. Kike, I talked to him about it, and I said, you know, do you want me to say Kike Hernandez, or would you prefer Aaron? He's like, yeah, Hernandez, man, that's my name. You know, the way we've done is just so white people can say it. And,
right,
and I'm like, well, I want to say it the way your mama says it, you know? That's why I always ask him, how's your mama say it?
That's sweet. But what about opposing players?
I can talk to their PR people.
Right.
So if not often are
probably a white guy that may not be accent.
Yeah, but they hear him every day, and so as long as it's acceptable to that, you know, I don't want to, you know, overpronounce a Latino guy's name or a Japanese player's name or a Korean player's name. But I also want to just let them know that that I've got it. And the feedback I've gotten from other organizations and other players is that they love it. They it makes them feel good. I don't want to make them feel too good, but I want to give them give them the respect that they deserve as Major League Baseball players. So I take an, you know, and I've mispronounced some players' names that I didn't take the time to do, but I've learned over the years that, you know, take a few minutes and get it right. And so
take us into your prep, because every game you have to prepare differently. And I know you also keep score, right, during the game?
Yeah, I've always kept score.
That's,
I remember,
so awesome, by when, the way. Yeah, so
when
awesome.
When I auditioned for the Padres, they're like, you need to learn how to keep score in order to do this job. If you want to do this job for us, you got to keep score.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I know how to keep score.
Hell yeah.
So I have a book. I've got stacks.
It's cool. You keep them. So you keep all your...
I don't know. Yeah, you know. But some of them are historic. There's an 18-inning World Series game won by Max Muncy on a walk-off back in 2018. There's Kershaw's 3,000th strikeout.
Man.
There's Ohtani's 3-home-run, 10-strikeout game the other day. So there's some history
That's
in there that I haven't figured out how to, you know. So maybe one of these days I'll gift you with a page out of one of those books that you can add to your Dodger memorabilia collection. But so I keep score. So I fill out my scorebook. Getting the lineups is very important to me, as early as I can get them, so I can put them on my lineup page.
And you get to the stadium at like 3, by the way, for a 7 o'clock game. Okay, so you're doing it's real.
Probably don't need to get there that early.
Yeah,
but I like to get there that early.
Yeah,
because it gets me in the headspace of here I am at the stadium. I get to watch the guys work out. I can kind of get an idea of who's going to be doing what that night. Like if Kike's taking balls at third base, I know he's probably going to be playing third that night against a left-handed pitcher.
Yeah.
So that kind of stuff. So I probably could just roll in there and do it at this point, but I prefer to really get myself ready. I get to talk to my guys. I get to find out what's going on in the pregame. I get to look at my script. Oh yeah, tonight you're announcing 120 of our Levy employees for a recognition on the field.
Wow,
120 names. Oh boy, I better, you know. So
interesting. I know. I think it was opening day when you guys recognized all the Dodger Stadium employees who had been there like 20, 25, 30, 35, 40 years, right?
Yeah.
So like
so
one
we
of
do
those
that every
kind
year
of deals.
As well.
Yeah.
And so I never know what it's going to be. I get a heads up the night before. I get a rough script, and then I get the final script in the afternoon. And so I'm able to go over it, and I rewrite a lot of stuff so that it sounds like it's coming out of my mouth. And it's, and you know, because we get a lot of stuff in from, you know, global partnerships will put something into the script, and then the Dodgers Foundation will put something into the script, and so it's the style. I try to make the style all the same. I try to make it stylistically.
And that's where your writing background kind of comes
from. That really
too.
Helps.
Yeah.
And to write for something to be spoken rather than to be read. It's two different types of writing.
Interesting.
So I like to go through it, and you, if you look at one of my scripts, you'll see it's like scribbled out, and I write in things, and one of the things that's most important to me is the military hero of the game, which we do every day.
Absolutely.
Every game in the second inning. And so I get that script beforehand, and I rewrite it, and I do a little research to find out more details on where this guy served, what he did, that kind of stuff. And because I want to, you know, this is their one shot at
absolutely
getting
for
some
the sacrifices
shine.
That they made.
Yeah.
And they're super important and honestly, dare I say, underappreciated in this society. So
right.
Thank you to everybody who has served. Absolutely.
So all that stuff is part of my prep. It's all my part of my, you know, make sure that that things transition smoothly and that every first pitch I don't say, the mound is yours, you know? Because it's oftentimes I'll see it, the mound is yours, the mound is yours, the mound is yours. I'll say, you know, let's see that pitch, or how about a strike, or, you know,
that's pretty
let's see
cool.
that arm, whatever it is. But I'll just try to make them different depending on how many they are. And I have all these other little tricks that I feel like I need to do for my own, you know, my own prep. And so it helps to get there early.
Okay, as far as prep for your voice, do you do any special treatment to maintain that voice, or is it just going strong? And like, do you drink tea? Do you
drink a lot of whiskey? And yes. that kind of gets it down here. Yeah. You know? No, I'm blessed that I got a pretty healthy voice.
Yeah.
I don't lose it if I get sick.
Yeah.
I've been sick in the booth many times.
I was going to ask that. So you show up, have you missed games?
I've missed, I think, 6 games over 11 season, 3 of which had to do with my daughter's graduations from college. And then last season in 2024, my wife and I went to Fiji to this for our 37th anniversary. And the only time we could go there was during during the season.
Wow.
Because it's a very small island that only allows 28 people on it, 14 couples at a time, and all this stuff.
Okay.
And so that was the only time I could do it. And so I missed 3 straight games, and they had somebody fill in for me. Her name's Nancy Morataya. She works for the Dodgers.
Okay.
In commercial traffic for Spanish language stuff. But they had her be my, and so she shadowed me for a few days. I trained her up and the fans kind of went a little bit crazy, and I didn't see any of it because I was on a South Pacific island.
Other side of the world.
Yeah. And then when I finally did go onto my Twitter or my social media, I was like, oh, there are people like, where's Todd? Is he okay? Is he dead?
Right.
Is he sick? Right. Because they never said anything like, hi, I'm Nancy Morataya filling in for Todd.
Yeah, she just did it. Yeah.
And nobody told her to do that. So she just did what she was. But I was like, when on the radio, when I was filling in for one of the big time anchors, I'd say, I'm Todd Lyons in for Jack Salvatore tonight, just so people would know that he was, because in radio, you get fired and you're gone and nobody knows what happened to you. You don't get to say, all right, everybody, it's been a minute. we'll see you later.
Right.
And I have to say that was, to change the subject real quick, that was one of the best parts of last year's season, is that we won the World Series and then we got to have that parade celebration at Dodger Stadium. So our whole crew got to be there. We did our, we filmed it. We did some announcements. We did some, video, stuff like that, support, audio support. But we got to just party with 50,000 Dodger fans. Incredible. And we got to also say, all right, it's been a great year. We'll see you next year. Whereas it always ends so suddenly.
Dodgers worst will go, emotional investment.
Yeah, Dodgers will go off to Arizona down 2-0 or something. Yeah. And that's it. Season's over. They got swept.
February to October, you invest everything,
and then
every
it just
day.
Ends. So last year, it didn't just end. It ended with us having a chance to actually. I actually got to hoist the World Series trophy.
Come on.
Yeah.
You have a picture of that?
I think it's my screensaver on my phone.
Wow, that's cool. Can you show that, by the way? Nice Valens and Whaler jersey, by the way. Does that show?
Yeah, yes. It was not. So, oops.
No, we got it.
So, and that was not too long after Fernando had passed.
Right.
So that was very emotional. But it was great to have that final party. Like, hey, we're the last team standing. We're at the top of the mountain. We're hoisting the trophy. And now we go into the offseason. And it's not like, where you just die and you're done.
No, it was awesome. And that honeymoon lasted, honestly, until the fires, to be honest with you. Like, LA was at this emotional high, and it was a great moment and the culmination of a good year for LA and a great year for the Dodgers. Talk to me a little bit. You're in the booth when I was up there. You have DJ Severe on one side.
He's on right on my left.
And Dieter Ruhl's right behind you. Dieter Ruhl, the immensely talented organist for the Dodgers. When I saw you guys have a great kind of interplay between the three of you, talk about that for a little bit.
Yeah, it's a rhythm. And, as a musician myself, I feel the musical, thing. So Severe handles the walk-up music and the music and, between innings and stuff like that, keeping the crowd bopping, right?
Yeah.
Dieter handles the little prompts and he'll play little things based on what he sees in the game.
He's encyclopedic with his knowledge,
great.
Man.
He's great. And he's clever. And so he has certain things that he does for certain counts. 2 balls, 2 strikes, 2 outs, deuces wild. He'll play the Twin Peaks theme, or he'll play Room 222. which is a real, you have to be a certain age to know
cuts.
That.
These are deep cuts. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Or, you know, Right Down the Line by Jerry Rafferty.
Right down the line.
When somebody fouls one down the left field line or something. So he has his, so we have a rhythm and I know what he's going to do. And so, you know, I wait, I let him make his musical phrase and then boom, designated hitter, you know, and then I come in. So I wait, I let him say what he wants. Sometimes I announce over his music. Sometimes I announce over the walk-up music. And so it's a thing that we've all, you know, developed over the course of years. And I think it's really fun because I feel like I'm jamming with them. I'm playing off them. They're playing off me. We're making room for each other and just, you know. It's very little, just no sound at all at Dodger Stadium.
True, that is. And it's interesting, you talk about playing off them. You're also in a band,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Core.
Yeah, C-O-R-E, Core.
Talk about that for a little bit.
Well, it's something I've been doing for, God, since the 90s. And I got together with a bunch of guys I played softball with, and we put together a band.
On that team, the aforementioned Encino team?
The Elvis Club is the name of the team. It's a great franchise in the showbiz league. And we just started playing together, and pretty soon we were electrified. Pretty soon we're playing, we played 14 straight LA marathons.
Wow,
We used to play Relay for Life things. We liked these big outdoor events because we could play for 3 or 4 hours instead of going to some bar where they give you 40 minutes. And we were a six-man band, you know, two guitars, keyboards, drums, bass.
Do you do instrument too?
I play harmonica.
Really? Yeah, and lead singer.
I have to. And the harp player.
Confirm, right.
We had a nice run. We've had a couple places where we would play on a regular basis. Do you remember the River Bottom over by Warner Brothers Studios? It's right across Cahuenga there, and it's a different place now, but that was a place we used to have some great gigs.
Wow.
And we play at a place in Sherman Oaks, the Sherman Oaks Lounge, which was a really cool bar for a while. And we got good following there. But we always liked the places that had the built-in crowds, where people were going to be there to run or walk or do something to help cancer research or run the marathon, something healthy and stuff like that. And we even played at Dodger Stadium a few years. Yeah, we did the, you know, before the marathon, because it started at Dodger Stadium, so they'd have an expo out in the parking lot at Dodger Stadium where people would come pick up their numbers, you know, get this or that, and a band would play and it would be us. And so we did that for several years. And then we used to play at all over LA, from the produce district to the there's a school out on right off Highland, in Hancock Park. Along the route, we would just play at different places.
Yeah.
But then they put us at mile 25 down at Ocean in San Vicente as the runners would make that curve toward the Santa Monica Pier and go down Ocean Avenue toward the pier. So we had this great prime spot.
That was a fantastic spot.
Sometimes people were hitting the wall as they're running through there. But we always wanted to put a little spring in their step. So we played 14 straight until the marathon got sold, and then they just stopped calling us over the past couple of years. I think the last one we did was 2019. But it's hard to keep a band together when you're in your 50s and 60s.
Yeah, when you're real life.
Everybody's got a job. There's a lot of, you know, and you know, you're not usually getting paid that much. And so it's an avocation. It's a hobby. So it doesn't take precedence in our life. And so we've gone through different drummers. We've gone through different bass players. But the core of core, me and a couple of the guys have been in the songwriters are all, you know, still together and still friends and still playing. But you know, most of the guys that moved on from us went to some other band or they did something else. And, you know, it's been a really fun thing to have music in my life, in that way. And I love to sing. It's just part of what I do.
I mean, with that voice, I not surprising. So, okay. So from here, what else is, you are the PA announcer for the Dodgers. Is that something that you're going to hope, you know, all things considered, obviously could be out of your hands, but something you want to do forever as long as you can?
I think so. I mean, I feel like I can do the job for, you know, as long as I stay healthy, as long as my voice stays strong, I can do it for, I don't know, till into my 70s, I suppose. if the Dodgers will have me. You know, I don't have a contract or anything like that. So they I work pretty much if they want me. And so I just feel stay healthy, and because it's a very physical job, you know, you doing anything with your voice
absolutely
is physical.
You're projecting for sure.
Yeah, the breathing, the projecting, the airway, all that stuff has to be healthy. So, yeah, I figure if I can stay healthy, I can do that, and I'd love to. I'd love to, you know, just do that, and then take the off seasons and travel or something.
Yeah.
With my wife, and when she gets to the point where she retires, then we may just do that. But right now, I do voiceover work on the side.
Oh, wow.
You know, I've done some cool national commercials.
Wow.
And, you know, I like narration a lot because I like to tell a story. And so I've, you know, done some of that kind of work. And you know, my business is going pretty good. And I kind of feel like it could go even more. I'm, you know, I do a lot of auditions and I don't get a lot of them. That's just, it's just very, very competitive.
I can't imagine who has a voice like this. Right. Yeah.
Well, sometimes they don't want a voice that's big like this. Want a kind of an everyman voice.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
Want to get away. Sense. You know, that,
right.
That guy.
Right. Fair.
But, right. You know, I'm like, but they use me sometimes for like on Liberty Mutual Insurance. You know, I was the one who introduced the Limu Emu and Doug whole thing that's been running for 7 years now almost. Liberty Mutual Insurance Company presents.
Good job.
A good-looking man and a flightless bird teamed up to save the world money. You know, so if they want that type of thing, I'm their guy. So I usually get a lot of the, oh, yeah, we want a kind of a weathered, gruff, you know, authoritative, somebody who's been there, done that. You know, that's the kind of spec that I fit for voiceover, but not just your everyday everyman.
Makes sense,
guy.
Because you're looking for a certain tone. Look, all right. So back wrapping up. World Series starts tonight in Toronto, and then we come back for games 3, 4, and if the Dodgers don't sweep, then also game 5 in Dodger Stadium, and that would be Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday,
yep.
Correct?
Yeah, all 5:08 start times, I believe.
And then regardless of what happens, you're done after game 5 or the parade and the culmination of that, correct?
Yeah, I hope we get to come back for a parade and
a
celebration.
Yeah, let's come back for that.
Because, you know, they went to New York and they closed out the series last year in New York in game 5.
Right.
And normally that would have been it, but we got to come back. And there was no pressure. There was no angst.
That's a fun day.
It was just a celebration. And so I hope that we are able to give that to LA again this year because we deserve it after the fires and you know, some of the heart-wrenching loss that this city has gone through.
Rough year, but it's been getting better, knock on wood. So hopefully this'll buoy us back up, but man, let's do it again. And Todd, let's do this again. This was a lot of fun. I really appreciate you coming in, man.
Did you record this? I thought we were just kind of, I thought we were just chatting.
There you go. Hey, I got to tell you.
This is it? Okay.
And then,
hey, everybody.
And then one
go
thing.
Go Dodgers.
One thing, by the way. Todd actually lives in my neighborhood. And this was a treat for me because I see him walking the streets like a normal guy, by the way. And then I'm a fanboy sometimes when I see him walking around with his Dodger hat all the time.
Well,
so
he would have never met me if I didn't fanboy out on him, on you. I'm like,
interesting.
Hey, I know you. And just came over and we started talking and you were really gracious. You didn't know who I was.
I was like, what's this voice though? I was like, this guy's got a voice that I know for sure.
How do I know this guy? So that's how we met. And that was really a bit of serendipity, I thought, because I'd been following you I've listened to LA in a Minute on KNX and really enjoyed that, because coming from Tom Labonge's office, and hearing a guy that is so tuned into Los Angeles and what makes this a great city and the history, because there's so much interesting history, and you really do a great job of shining a light on that. I really appreciate that.
Well, thank you, man. We're going to keep loving the city, and we are going to celebrate another World Series title, and Todd will be narrating the entire thing. So thank you, Todd. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and let's go Dodgers.
Let's go Dodgers.
All right, LA. It's been a minute.
Lowe's, we're about to kick off something epic for fans who want more messy. And trust us, you'll want to be a rewards member when it happens. Join for free and get access to messy exclusives, surprises, and more. Head to lowes.com/moremessy. Now's the time to get in because members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. Visit lowes.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events. Major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories. The unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.